Okay, welcome back. Last week, Vladimir Putin flew from Moscow to Rostov-on-Don and had a meeting with the general staff running the war in Ukraine, Special Military Operation War in Ukraine. He was not happy. The Russian losses in the Avdiivka ongoing battle were getting to be sizable. Somebody said that up to 50 tanks and APCs were destroyed. And I'm sure the question that Putin had, beside what the hell is going on here, is how can the Ukraine army continue to fight like this when they have been absolutely annihilated virtually every day on the field? And the answer is European and American heavy artillery is doing a lot of the damage, all right? We've given them, like we're going to give and have been giving the Israelis, all the weaponry, all the advice, all the support, and we are basically fighting the war. It's a proxy war. We're using Ukrainian lives to grease the machine. Some people are saying now that the total number of Ukraine dead is about a million. A million in the war. So keep that in mind. Putin was not happy. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if... Mitch, who's the number one guy? Is it Surovikin? Is that who it is? Or am I thinking of another one?
Gerasimov is
the head guy. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's number one, not Surovikin. I heard Surovikin was brought back, but whatever. Anyway, Gerasimov.
He's the deputy commander now.
Gotcha. Well, Gerasimov may be reassigned here. The Avdiivka thing is really ugly. And that's near, actually, it's a suburb of Donetsk, so to speak, to the west. And the Ukrainians have lost over 500 troops in the last day. These are dead. One day. Not a week, not a couple days, one day. So anyway, when you look at the whole line of contact, the Russians have been playing defense. The Ukrainians have been suicide attacking the Russians for over 600 days now. And there have been very little change overall in that line of demarcation. There just hasn't been much change. A little bit here, a little bit there. But essentially, what the hell have they been fighting for? Nobody's winning. You can't win when you have no air force. You have no air support. You can't. And the Ukrainians are certainly well aware of that. And can you imagine how it is for those men? And there are some women who are drafted, conscripted, and after 2 weeks of training, sent to the front to die. They know they're going to die. They know too many people who have gone before them. It's a pretty ugly scene. Anyway, Mitchell Henderson is back with us tonight, one of the truly great analysts on the world stage now, and it's always highly enlightening to hear Mitch's views. Go ahead, my friend. Take it away.
Okay. Well, listen, this is a note. I've already scheduled to speak with some people in Russia this Thursday about... I've asked them that exact question. I want them to give me a good answer and stuff. So,
right.
So next week, I'm going to talk about all this stuff, okay?
Very good, yeah.
So today, I just want to talk about how perceptions matter, okay? Truth doesn't really matter. It's what people perceive that matters, okay? Because they act on their perceptions. So I want to talk about... I want to start talking about a truth. And this is the attack on the Baptist Hospital in Gaza. The narrative in the West is that the Islamic Jihad fired a Qassam rocket at Israel, but it fell short and hit the Baptist hospital, completely destroying it. Let's put this question to rest right now. First, Hamas does not have missiles. They have rockets. What is the difference? A missile has a guidance system of some sort. A rocket does not. A rocket is a fire-and-forget system. They bring a steel stand outside, slant the rocket towards its target, launch it, and run before Israel can launch a weapon back at them. They are only pulled out in the open just before they are launched in order to avoid detection. These are homemade rockets. They are made from steel water pipes of standard size, about 7 inches in diameter and 7 feet long. A cone is welded to the top and a nozzle to the bottom. At the bottom, a slug is formed from sugar and potassium nitrate to be used as a propellant. It is set off with an electrical match, just like a children's model rocket tits. Above the propellant is about 22 pounds of ball bearings. Above this is an explosive made of about 22 pounds of urea nitrate and TNT. In the cone, there is a nail loaded with a spring so that when the rocket nose hits something, it drives the nail into a pistol shell's primer. The bullet is the shell is filled with a small amount of primary explosives, such as very easy to make mercury fulminate. The primer sets off the TNT urea nitrate mixture, and explosion sprays the ball bearings out as shrapnel. This is an anti-personnel weapon that kills and wounds people from the spraying shrapnel. It is not a weapon used to destroy buildings. The fuse is a contact fuse, so it detonates when it strikes something. Explosions are spherical. In other words, the force goes out equal in all directions. A 250-pound gravity bomb with J-dams on it has a time fuse. In other words, it is designed to penetrate through the roof of a building and detonate further down in the building so that the explosive force is released in all directions inside a building and therefore bring it down. These are meant to penetrate and destroy buildings. They do not use TNT with fillers. They use Composition B, which is RDX-based, not 22 pounds of it, but 250 pounds of it. An Israeli 250 gravity bomb is an anti-materiel bomb that can implode a building, just like we have seen them do on the news for the past 2 weeks. The Qassam rocket only has 22 pounds of explosive and is an anti-personnel bomb that kills with shrapnel, but is not even expected to do much damage to buildings. The Israeli gravity bomb has over 10 times more explosives in it, and those explosives are higher quality than the homemade urea nitrate TNT explosives. To get a comparative idea of this, consider the Oklahoma City bombing of 1995. Timothy McVeigh used 5,000 pounds, to destroy the federal building. It killed 168 people and injured 680. Relatively speaking, the damage to the Baptist Hospital in Gaza was worse, killing a much higher proportion of people than at the federal building. Remember that explosions expand in a sphere. What McVeigh did was tamp the explosion by having a solid wall on the side of the truck opposite of where the building was in order to force the explosive force towards the building. McVeigh used ANFO, or ammonium nitrate fuel or oil mixture. An Israeli gravity bomb uses Composition B, which is mostly RDX, which has the highest brisance, or shattering effect of explosives. The urea nitrate TNT mixture does not have as much brisance as RDX has. On February 26, 1993, Islamic terrorists used a 1,200-pound urea nitrate bomb planted under the Twin Towers to try and bring down one of the towers and cause mass casualties. It did neither. It only killed 6 people. A 22-pound urea nitrate bomb that strikes on top of a building will do far less damage because it's sitting at the top and the explosion goes up. Okay. Remember that the Israeli gravity bombs penetrate through several floors before they detonate. They have time fuses. So you be the judge. What do you think did it? Look at Oklahoma City Federal Building after the explosion, knowing that it took 5,000 pounds of explosives to do that damage. How 1,200 pounds of urea nitrate failed to take down a building. Then look at your TV now and know that it takes at least a 250-pound charge of RDX to bring those buildings down. Uh-huh. Then ask yourself if a 22-pound urea nitrate bomb could do the same. Most people do not know that.
Mitch, let me ask.
Let me. Yes.
Let me contribute something. Your description of the Hamas homemade rocket from a water pipe was really good. No one else has made that description. I've never heard anybody else explain it like that. That's very helpful. These are unguided, fire and forget, 4th of July fireworks kind of things. Oh, yeah, they can kill people. They can't take buildings down. Now, here is the sound of the bomb on its way in and the explosion at the hospital. And I think many of you have heard this. I'm going to play it again. It's the sound of a U.S.-made JDAM guided bomb coming in at hypersonic speed. Okay? This is not a Hamas bottle rocket. Now, just listen to the high-tech, the horrible sound of this thing coming in. I don't know what speed it is, but it's probably over 1,000 miles an hour or something. Here we go. You hear it screaming by? That's awfully fast. Here it is. Okay, one more time. This is not an unguided rocket. And there went the hospital. All right. Very good. Hope that helped.
Yes, it does. Because everything sounds different. I mean, I was a soldier for a long time. I can tell an M16 round from an AK-47 round. They have distinctive sounds. Mm-hmm. Okay, so most people do not know what explosives can do. So the Israelis feel comfortable that you will take their word for it. They fool the masses about everything else. They certainly can fool the feeble-minded pedophile Joe Biden about it and really do expect Americans to believe Joe Biden. I think this should settle the issue for you. When Israel presents this evidence, just ask yourself if you could do that. A photo of a rocket falling, they probably have hundreds of stock photos of the very thing. An audio tape with two Arabs talking? If you know a couple of Arabs, you can do that also. They take us for chumps. Contact the Israeli embassy now, and they will sell you the Golden Gate Bridge cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. So let me get into some perceptions. And what these perceptions is, these are perceptions around the end times and the final leaders and stuff, okay? Because people really, religious belief is much stronger than political belief, okay? So perceptions can be much more persuasive than truth. For example, in the 1990s, the Serbs, Bosniaks, and Croats, were engaged in a relentless and merciless war. They slaughtered each other with reckless abandon. These people are all, in fact, the exact same ethnic group and speak the same language. Only alphabets and religion separated them. Croats were Roman Catholic who used the Roman alphabet. The Serbs were Eastern Orthodox who used the Cyrillic alphabet. The Bosniaks were Muslim who used Arabic script. Religion matters. The Hebrews and the Arabs are the exact same ethnic group, the Semites. They differ only in language and religion. They are fierce enemies. Christianity is in this mix also. In these days, there are Christian Jews and Christian Arabs. Zionist Jews hate both Muslims and Christians. Remember Rabbi Schneerson of the Chabad Lubavitch in 1994 said that their Messiah cannot come until all Muslims, Christians, and white people are exterminated. There is an aspect of all three faiths called eschatology. Eschatology is that part of theology concerned with the last things and the end times. While ethnic, racial, and class perceptions are powerful, religious perceptions are even more powerful in motivating people's behavior. Eschatology, or end times and apocalyptic perceptions, are even more powerful because they deal with your ultimate fate. There are differences between the various religions and how the end times unfold, but there are also differences in the interpretation within each religion. Knowing this information should help you interpret the significance of events through the eyes of the various players. We will focus on each religion's interpretation of their Messiah, the final ruler of the world. Okay, so I'll start with Judaism. In Judaism, the Messiah is the liberator and savior. He is not supernatural. He is a man. Okay. In Orthodox Judaism, the Messiah comes when the Promised Land is restored to the Jews, 1948, and Messiah saves them from their enemies. That could be happening next. The Messiah is also the high priest over the restored temple that must be constructed on the Temple Mount. Hamas launched its attack on Israel on October 7th, calling it Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, as a direct response to what they see as Israel's efforts to take down the Al-Aqsa Mosque because it sits on the Temple Mount. Orthodox Jews believe that this is the place where God can talk directly to them in a temple that is constructed there. It is the third holiest place in Islam and the holiest place in Judaism. Okay, so Hasidic Judaism believe that they can take action to hasten the Messiah's coming and that there is a person born to each generation with the potential to become the Messiah if the Jewish people warrant his coming. With 65% of Israelis being atheists and sodomy widely practiced in progressive Marxist Israeli society, that may be a hard sell to the observant Jews. Chabad Messianism is similar in that Jews can hasten the Messiah's coming. Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson is regarded as their Messiah, even though he died, and they still call him the living Messiah. It was Rabbi Schneerson that said in 1994, before he died, that the Messiah cannot show himself until all Christians, Muslims, and white people are exterminated. This they have in common with Klaus Schwab in the World Economic Forum, Great Reset. That is accompanied by the Great Replacement. It is white people, Christians and Muslims, that must be replaced. Conservative Judaism is noncommittal on the issue. They believe that each person can fashion their own speculative visions, some believing that it is literally true, but most understand these visions to be elaborate metaphors for a messianic age, when there is a peaceful world community, when warfare is abolished, when justice and compassion will be the norm in interpersonal and international relations, and when Jews can be gathered in their promised land to once again be masters of their own destiny. Jews need to live as if they are bringing about the coming of the Messiah. They do not say whether the Messiah will be a charismatic human figure or is a symbol of the redemption of humankind from the evils of the world. Some even believe the Messiah is a collective of all progressive human beings that is the actual Messiah. In Reform and Reconstructionist Judaism, they do not accept the idea that there will be a Messiah, although some believe that there will be a messianic age or the world to come, in which all Jews are obligated to work towards a concept they call Tikkun Olam, which is bringing that messianic age about. In Karaite Judaism, they do not stress a return to the Promised Land and see the Messiah as a spiritual and not necessarily temporal person. Zionism is basically Judaism without God. The only gods are men, and through men's efforts, a world government takes over and rules a utopia based in Jerusalem and in the land of Zion. Zionism sees the establishment of Eretz Israel as a necessary step in the Zionist Messiah coming. This makes clear that the West Bank and Gaza must be an integral part of Israel. Zionism, Marxism, and Bolshevism are symbols of the same thing. Zionism has its sources in humanism and progressivism, but these also can stand alone. Okay, so let me move into Christianity. And I'm going to be very brief about this because there's many, many different interpretations. So
one quick thing to add here. One quickie.
Yes.
Chabad, 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 also known as the Lubavitchers, are one of the most powerful elements of Judaism in the world. They are, I read one source, they claim that 60% or more of Jews are Chabad Lubavitcher types. They believe Schneerson, who again, as Mitchell said, requires that all non-Jews be exterminated before the second coming can occur, the return of the Messiah. So this is not good. This is how these people think. That's why they don't like goyim. Okay, go ahead.
So you might say that the Chabad Lubavitchers and the Zionists are on the same page. Okay,
yes.
They're
yes.
working towards the same thing.
Yes.
Okay, so since we live in a predominantly Christian country, I'm just going to talk about the broad sweeps of this. There are so many interpretations that what I say here is meant to be the big picture and generic. I am not a preacher of any kind, so keep that in mind. Christianity has many interpretations of the end times. It fundamentally describes the end times as the final 7 years after the Jews return to their promised land and rebuild their temple on the Temple Mount under the rulership of Satan's Trinity, Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet. The Antichrist will use the crisis of World War III to come to power. He will be the world savior by bringing a peace treaty. The Antichrist will be an evil world dictator who rules his world government for the final 7 years of hell and suffering. He will also be so arrogant that he will think he is God and will declare himself God about halfway through his 7 years reign. His rule will end in the final battle of Armageddon. There are those who believe that the Jewish Messiah and the Christian Messiah are the same. They are not. They are very different. They are, in fact, opposites. The Christian Messiah was supposed to be the Jewish Messiah, but they rejected him. I have seen speculation all my life about who would be the Antichrist. They point to many people and possibilities. It is said that before the Antichrist comes, the spirit of the Antichrist will steer the world towards its end. It is obvious that the spirit of the Antichrist, what the spirit of the Antichrist is. It started with the Pharisees and the Sadducees and is in modern times represented by Zionism and Marxism. This is because they are historically against Christ. It was the very precursors of the Zionists, the Pharisees, that had Christ executed. The ultimate expression of hatred is murder. The Zionists call this concept the blood libel. They always attach libel to thoughts they do not want us to think. So it's prohibited and ridiculed if you talk about the blood libel. But our God is not Zionism, and we should not let them bully us. It is a crime to proselytize Jews into Christianity in Israel, for Zionists' sake. However, there are about 45 million Christian Zionists who support Israel to hasten the coming of our Messiah. The theology is called dispensationalism. It holds that the Bible must be interpreted through God's relationship with his chosen people. This is just created like in the within the last 100 or so years. The other way to look at it is that the Pharisees and the Zionists killed God's only son who he sent to his chosen people because they habitually prostituted themselves to other gods, predominantly themselves. They rejected Christ. At that point, they no longer were his chosen people. They have not been for 2,000 years, but they still act like it, and they tell everybody that they are. That is Zionism. The covenant for non-Zionist Jews is still in effect. God does not do mass punishment. He judges us individually. Christianity is, in other words, a clear break from Judaism. The Messiah of the Zionists is, in fact, the Antichrist. Now I'm saying this because it's like so many people believe that we have to support Judaism. Christians have to support Judaism. I do not know why this is. Okay, it's absurd, actually. Okay, so let me go into Islam and the way they think about it. Okay, the Muslims also have an Antichrist, and he's called the Dajjal. Just like in Christianity, Christ comes and destroys the Antichrist. In Islam, the Mahdi comes and destroys the Dajjal. Their Mahdi is a human, just like the Jewish Messiah, who comes to the world during its final 7 years. In addition, while the Dajjal and the Mahdi are present in the last days, Isa is also present as a separate figure. Isa is Jesus. You will hear them say, Isa ini Maryam, which means Jesus, son of Mary. In other words, the Mahdi is the exact description of what Christians call the Antichrist. The Muslim Dajjal is the Jewish Messiah. I mean, Muslims believe that Dajjal is the Jewish Messiah. Okay. In Islam, there are two major descriptions of the Mahdi. The Sunni Mahdi is a normal human being of flesh and blood. He has no supernatural powers. He shall be born in the end times. He will live a normal life. He will reveal himself in Damascus. The Shia Mahdi, Mahdi has already been born. He currently lives amongst us. He could be anywhere. He is alive and active, helping the poor and performing miracles. He has supernatural powers. He will become a parent. The people will choose him as leader, but the actual leaders will not like the guy. Israel will send an army to destroy him, but God will destroy them. He is the 12th man who has returned from occultation. And that's a big theological thing when their leader of Shia Muslim was murdered 1,000 years ago or whatever. They said, well, he's going to come back. So this is the 12th man coming back again. Okay. Right. Once again, the important thing is that people believe in the Messiah, the Antichrist, and the Mahdi, who are all the same. It is a motivator. The Muslims, Ishaal, and Mahdi are both the Christian Antichrist. Okay. Right. So action because of perception. The Zionists give lip service to the idea of the Jewish Messiah, and so having been building settlements in the West Bank with reckless abandon, squeezing Palestinians out. Netanyahu has been funding and actively supporting Hamas to undercut the Palestinian Authority, to divide and conquer the Palestinians. They keep encroaching on the Al-Aqsa Mosque and are determined to build the temple on the current site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They will not be satisfied until Eretz Israel has cleansed itself of all Palestinians, either in Israel proper or in the West Bank. Mm-hmm. The stand down of intelligence and military services was intended to allow a shocking massacre that could be used as a pretext to accomplish Eretz Israel, build the temple where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is, and to destroy the Iranian power. Although the Zionists are atheists, they play to the religious Jews because, well, perceptions matter. Not all buy it, though. Christian Zionists in the West give uncritical support to the Zionists in Israel. George W. Bush was a Christian Zionist. Before he invaded Iraq in 2003, he told the Emir of Kuwait that he was going to do it to bring the apocalypse on, to accelerate it. In his 2004 budget, Bush used the same apocalyptic rhetoric, saying that he was not going to include raising taxes to pay for the war in Afghanistan or Iraq so the U.S. would run a large deficit and the American economy would collapse as a result. In Christian Zionist eschatology, America must cease being a great power for the apocalypse to begin. It's very simple. Israel doesn't exist without America. Israel's a small country with a small population. The only reason it exists is because of the United States of America. So the apocalypse cannot come on, and Christ cannot return until Israel is attacked viciously. Okay. So while the Bush administration was Christian Zionist, the Obama, Trump, and Biden administration were Jewish Zionists. This is accumulated in the Biden stand down. Anyone with common sense knows that the United States cannot win a hot war with China, North Korea, Russia, Serbia, West Africa, and the Muslim world at the same time. The pedophile Biden regime is having America commit the equivalent of suicide by clock. In the Muslim world right now, Operation Al-Aqsa Flood has created an intense chatter among all Islamic sects about the soon coming of the Mahdi. I mean, this is intense. They're screaming this in the streets. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Muslims in the streets protesting the Baptist hospital slaughter. Just as Israel is seeing an opportunity to cleanse Israel of all Muslims and Christians, the Muslim world sees this as an opportunity to cleanse the Middle East of Jews. Okay, so I just want to reflect on something else here, the connection with BLM and DEI. The American Constitution specifically speaks against there being no inherited nobility and specifically says that there shall be no corruption of blood. The idea was that mm-hmm. everyone makes their own life. Pride and shame cannot be inherited. The individual is responsible for making their own name in this world and is not to be helped by the greatness of their father or hindered by the sins of their father. In order to create a mindset that will accept the premise that Israel gets to take a people's land away from them in Palestine that they have not occupied for 2,000 years because they claim to have been mistreated, they want us to accept the premise that people who have never owned slaves owe people who were never slaves reparations because they were also mistreated. Supporting Israel and DEI are both the same animal, and both right. are as un-American as you can get. You might even say that supporting Israel and DEI are actually unconstitutional. So DEI is a big a major process. The Green New Deal, which DEI and CRT springs from, these concepts were created and pushed on us and pushed in our education system, pushed in college campuses for decades. And the reason why is they needed to change the mindset from America being an individualist country to it becoming a collectivist country where what your ancestors do matter. That's why it doesn't even matter if your ancestors didn't own slaves. You still owe the descendants of slaves money because you supposedly benefited in some way, yeah. shape, or form.
And don't forget,
so it's Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Robert Kennedy Jr. believes that. He thinks that those people yeah. are all entitled to lots of money.
And as I said last week in the when I was comparing Marxism to the Ten Commandments, what is all that? That's envy. That's coveting what other people has. It's also theft. Taking money from people who did not do anything to give to people who did not suffer under that regime, okay? Right. And it's total theft, it's total envy, it's total covetousness. So it's all evil, it's all a sin, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a purpose for it. The purpose is so we will buy into the idea that, the thing is that I don't know what we don't understand about this. God sent the Jewish people into exile because they killed the Messiah that he sent to them. They rejected his Messiah. People will talk about in Genesis says, those who bless Israel, God will bless them. Yeah, that's back in Genesis, but read on the Old Testament on from there, like especially Hosea, who's saying that the Jewish people are like a whore, and they just betray God constantly, and they turn to other gods constantly and stuff. I mean, you should be able to put all these concepts together and figure mm-hmm. it out. The Jewish people are not the chosen people, okay? They were. They lost that, okay? So, you know. Now you have to remember that, of course, you know, Jesus came and some Jews did accept him, and even today some Jews accept him, and that's fine, okay?
I agree. By the way, it's the M-A-H-D-I is pronounced Mahdi. The H is silent. That's, I think, how they pronounce it. You were mentioning that earlier.
Well, I was listening this week to listening to a lot of videos from the Middle East on the issue, and they were saying Mahdi is how they were
very
saying
very good
Mahdi
very good. Like so that. It came right from an Arab speaker. Then all right, good.
Right from an Arab speaker.
Yeah, the Americans don't often pronounce it that way, but that's good to know. It's a big concept. People don't understand over here. The monumental feelings that the Arab world has about what's going on, they're all uniting against this. They know that they're marked for extermination, too. This is not a good situation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Yeah, I mean, Biden wanted to go talk to Mohammed Abbas and the president of Egypt and the president of the king of Jordan. They all said, nope. They wouldn't even take a phone call from him. Okay. So, we're back to that. They do not respect this guy at all. I mean, they have common sense. At least they do not respect this pedophile. And we somehow, our media, our politicians, our elites, they all treat this guy like he's some respectable person. You know, a pedophile can never be a respectable person, ever.
Nope.
It is just out of the question, you know? But that's part of the thing, too. See, they want us to believe that in order to make us believe that the Zionists should own Israel and kick all the Palestinians out, they got to get us to believe this absurd concept. So they have us believing in all kinds of absurd things, like men can be women, okay, like there's 153 different genders. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's pouring it on. That's what it all is about, is getting you to believe any stupid thing that comes down the road and not use any common sense at all to do the math in your own head and figure it out, you know? It is kind of apparent
Just for a moment, let's turn in a different direction because there's so much going on right now. The video is up in headlines for all of you who want to see it. The American Aircraft Carrier Task Force, I think it's 48 ships. These are big ships. And the Eisenhower is not on scene yet. I don't know how many ships are coming with that. But the question is, this should be asked immediately, and we know the answer. Who's paying for this? It's a huge expense. Not to mention the fact that 10 more Navy ships, are carrying 12,000 U.S. soldiers to take their places with their Israeli brothers and sisters. They're going to offload them. They're going to deploy them in Israel. Then they're going to start the big war. And this Gulf of Tonkin is going to happen. Something's going to happen which will force the Americans into the war. Full speed. Just like Tonkin.
Well, listen, let me tell you right now. So these carrier groups, they have so many anti-aircraft systems and anti-missile missiles and so forth that now if they were sailing into the Taiwan Straits, yes, China can't take them out because they can overwhelm them with so many missiles. But the missiles that are available, and there are available missiles in Lebanon that can shoot offshore and sink a ship way offshore. That can happen. So, but what they cannot do is they cannot swarm those carrier groups and get a missile through. They cannot do that. I'm telling you right now, there's nobody over there that can do that. Okay?
What happens if they get off a lucky shot, Mitch? A lucky shot.
Well,
they hit a frigate
or
a destroyer.
My point is, if they do hit it with a missile, it's not because they're swarming it. It's not because it's a hypersonic missile. It's because we are going to allow them to do that that we can have our casus belli, or our cause of war.
Okay? That's right.
So it'll be another stand down, just like what happened on October 7th. Yeah. There'll be another stand down. So they'll show us, a lucky shot got through. But that's impossible. It's just as impossible, it's just as impossible as those Hamas terrorists getting across the border and doing their dirty deeds. That was impossible to do.
Tonkin never even happened. Nothing happened.
It didn't even happen.
So they let their guard down and they false flag it or whatever, and a missile hits an aircraft support vessel, carrier support vessel, a frigate, whatever, kills 30 or 40 crewmen. We're in the war just like that. Bang. We're in. Boom. Congress will vote it. We're in.
It's just that
That's
easy.
All it's going to take.
And if it doesn't happen because we allow it to happen, we might just do it ourselves. Okay?
That's
also a possibility.
Yes.
Sometimes our enemies are too inept, and so we just do it for them.
That's true.
Okay. We will kill our own people to do this. And I mean, this is not a bizarre thing. I remember in 1972, I was sitting on the Korean DMZ in the U.S. Army, and I found out that we were a DIP unit, a DIP unit. And what a DIP unit is a die-in-place unit. They were going to sacrifice us so that they would, so that we would get whacked, and then we'd have a reason to go to war with North Korea. Okay.
There you go.
So in our case, we had Hawk batteries, Hawk anti-aircraft batteries, nearby, but they weren't gonna be available to shoot down any missiles that attacked us. I mean, this was like everybody knew that we were a die-in-place unit. So this is not old. This is not a new thing. This is old. We were doing it in 1972. So, you know, you know, we manipulate things. It's just how it is, you know.
Well, we're not sending 12,000 troops over there to sit around and pick their noses. They're going over there to fight. It's obvious.
Yeah.
So this is going to happen.
Well, you know, there's let me tell you something right now that can tell you what's wrong with the whole picture in Israel. So they just had their worst attack in their history, right? They say that on the news all of the time.
Okay? Oh, it was, what was it, 10 that. Times, 10 9/11s or some crap. Just lies.
Yeah, and it's the worst attack on Jews since the Holocaust. Okay?
Oh,
I mean,
please.
The hyperbole is just overwhelming.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So I have this question for you. Okay, why are all the Israeli generals that were in charge on October 7th? Why are they still in charge? They should be relieved for failure.
Not one person has been taken down because they were ordered to stand down. According to one female former IDF border wall guard who was involved with all the high-tech stuff, she said there is no chance, zero, that this could have happened organically on its own. This was a stand down. All troops were stood down. They were pulled away from this entire area. And it just couldn't have happened. I've got the whole testimony in video from two IDF guards who are now retired who worked on the wall. They said, there's just no way. It couldn't have happened. No chance. And like you said, did happen somehow, heads would have rolled all over the place by now. Nothing.
But you have to understand the Egyptian intelligence was just, like, what's the matter with these people? They told them repeatedly in the weeks before the attack that it was coming.
That's right.
And how inconvenient. It's like, hey, just shut up, move on, you know. It does say anything, whatever. But, you know, it's like they were told and stuff. We did this same thing in 1941 in Pearl Harbor. The military attaché in Jakarta, Indonesia, it was called the Dutch East Indies at the time, he sent the information. He actually got a hold of the war plan for the attack on Pearl Harbor, and he sent it to us a week before, and so inconveniently, and we had to, like, hush him up and keep that secret. We had to tell him, hey, just shut your mouth about this, never say anything, because we need them to attack, not so we could go to war with Japan, but so we could jump in the war on Britain's side against Germany. That was the real reason for the attack on Pearl Harbor. And most of our effort went to Europe, not against Japan. The people fighting Japan and the Navy and the Army and so forth were begging for resources to prosecute the war against them. Okay, that's why Japan lasted longer than Germany did, is because we did not have as many resources until after Germany failed. Then we had more resources to attack Japan.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, these are always manipulated and stuff. You know, it's like, because here's the truth. Here's the truth. So you want to just step back a minute and think about it. Okay, the only countries close to us that can actually attack us are Canada and Mexico, and they are much weaker than us. Okay, they can't possibly invade us and take over. So Canada and Mexico are not a threat to the United States. Okay, we have a giant Pacific Ocean, 7,000-8,000 miles of water between us, and at a few miles, 1,000 miles of water between us and across the Atlantic to Europe. Okay, what these are is this means that if they attack America, if anybody in Europe or Asia attacks America, we have internal lines of communication, so we can resupply and we can put reinforcements up there.
Right.
But China or somebody in Europe has to cross thousands of miles of oceans in order to get to the American shores. And those very long lines of communication are very vulnerable to submarines and very vulnerable to attack. It makes attack on America impractical, especially in World War One. Germany was not a threat to the United States in World War One. In World War II, Germany was no threat. As a matter of fact, Hitler was totally uninterested in what was going on in America. Japan, they only attacked us because we cut off all their fuel. We cut off their oil.
We
and they're an industrial nation. They needed it.
Correct.
We picked that war with them.
Yep.
You know?
Now, I want you to keep in mind about this, all the distance across the Pacific between the U.S. and China. It's irrelevant now. The Chinese are already here. There are 5.5 million CCP members in the United States legally now, not to mention the 20,000-30,000 who have come across the border. And those who have come across the border are said to be by border agents, all about the same age, same haircut, same identification, same tattoos. They're CCP. Out of the 5.5 million who have come here relatively recently with visas, and they're all CCP members, most of those are said to be fighting age males and females. Let's take 5 million. Let's just round it off. 10% of 5 million is 500,000. 500,000 Chinese terrorists turned loose in cells all over the country to bring cities down, create transportation and energy chaos, to blow up substations, shoot them, 10, 20 members each. That's all they need. They don't need 100, 1,000. Small cells can just do horrific. This country could be taken down from within. We only have 1.2 million in the entire military. 375,000 of those are overseas, Mitch, in 150 different countries or thereabout. So we have less than 800,000 here. They're not all combat trained at all. And we got 500,000 Chinese. Let's take 20%. That's a million-man army right here, right now. And the weapons are here. They've all been pre-staged, in my view. They brought them in Costco shipping containers. They're secreted all over the U.S. These Chinese could be organized, and they're organized already. They could be turned loose on this country at any time. Then you have all the Latinos here, 25, 30 million of them. Many of them, as you see, are almost invariably fighting age. They could be organized and turned loose as well. We could be taken down from within, in my view, easily. I don't think it's a problem. Unless, you know, the only chance we'd have would be Bubba, and every armed American would begin suddenly to grow a backbone and stand and fight. That would be the only way.
Well, listen, which leads me to my conclusion. The only threat to the American people, to American freedom, is the government of the United States.
Yes,
and
sir.
I say that because those 5 million Chinese would not be here if not given permission and allowed to be here the government of the United States.
Okay. You got it.
They are the only threat to America is the American government, because the American people certainly have no say in the American government. They tried to tell us we do, but we have no say. I mean, they shove crap down our throat every day, okay, that we have to put up with, okay. So they actually do want us to be unhappy with them. Okay. You know, it's like whenever they say save democracy, that means save them from democracy. Okay. That's what they really mean. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
because they are the enemy. They are the enemy of our freedom. They are the enemy of our lives. I mean, they are destroying our lives. I mean, just think about this. Think about what they've done. When I woke up the other morning, I looked at the news, and I saw two articles that were very interesting and very telling. And this is saying that they don't even have to import anybody to take us down, because in Fall River, Massachusetts, they had a group of kids, like 20 or 30 kids or so, that went into they went in and bothered some other store, but then they went to a McDonald's, and the police were there trying to get them out. And these kids were just telling the cops, F you, you know, we're staying here. We're not leaving. Right. And they had to get a whole bunch of cops over there to start arresting these kids for trespass after warning. I mean, there's just no respect for authority at all, okay? Just total lawlessness. And then the same day across the nation in Long Beach, California, there is these people that lived in this relatively nice condominium that unfortunately they had built a skate park next to the condominium. And this mob of teenager skateboarders, they're setting cars on fire in the parking garage. They're breaking out the people's windows in their houses. Right. They even attack people when they're walking out of the thing. That we are under attack from our own people, not just from foreigners coming in. I mean, they've changed the culture so much that they have effectively destroyed us from within, and it is intentional. It is not just, they just made a mistake. That's not what happened. This is intentional. I mean, this is Marxism 101, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. All right. Very good report and update. Thank you, Mitch. Have a safe week. Talk to you next Monday, and we will get to that as soon as possible. I can't wait to hear it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. All right. There he goes, Mitchell Henderson. And that's it for Monday. Back with you tomorrow. Tuesday, remember, prepare and beware. Talk tomorrow.